Let's freaking go! Are you kidding me? Dave Aranda, the arguable best coordinator in LSU history. That's who we will play in the Texas Bowl on New Year's Eve at 2:30 Central. It should be an absolutely positively fun day of action, but I want to discuss, what does all of this mean in the grand scheme of things? I know a lot of you don't give a rip about the bowl game. You are so worried about the transfer portal. You are so worried about what is happening next with this new crop of recruits. And honestly, a lot of you are just focused on this 12-team college football playoff. A little bit later, I'm going to tell you the team that absolutely positively did get screwed. I'm also going to give you a few of my big transfer portal targets. But I want to start off with the bowl announcement today, the Texas Bowl, a bowl that we have been to a few times. Now, all these bowl games kind of feel similar, whether it's a Texas Bowl or the Capital One Bowl or the Cheez-Its Bowl. And the harsh truth, being an LSU fan, and I understand this is not going to feel comfortable, but these bowl games have actually been more of who we are as a program. We have been in more of these kind of not necessarily lower rung bowls, but a lot of these types of bowls in our tenure. Now, lucky enough, when we did have elite teams, when we got to the national championship game, we won 3 out of 4. And for the most part, when we truly had a special team, we were able to get to where we needed to get and win to what we needed to win. Yeah, there were a few teams that you felt should have gotten more out of what they did this year. And of course, 2023 LSU feels like that with Jaden Daniels. Of course, you feel the same way about maybe a 2016 LSU when you had Leonard Fournette, Darius Geis, and that defense with Arden Key. And that game, that season, ended with a bowl victory over Lamar Jackson in the Buffalo Wild Wings Bowl in Orlando, Florida. I was at that game. So these games can still feel very exciting, but this is Baylor. Baylor! We could have had so many more sexy bowl games, but it was Baylor. It was Baylor! I don't understand why this dream is slow, but you'll get me blurry tonight. Type Y for yes, type N for no if you can hear me loud and clear. Okay. Apologies for that. We'll get to some of your comments. But the bottom line, quit it. Quit it with it just being a bowl game. I understand that it's Baylor. I'm not saying LSU is above Baylor. I am not. I am not saying LSU is a team that should look at Baylor as a program that's not on their level. That is the case, but I don't think this is just some program we should just overlook. There is zero history, to my knowledge, of LSU and Baylor. Nothing that really connects these programs outside of a Heisman Trophy between Robert Griffin III and Tyrann Mathieu. And at the time, while LSU fans could see it, it really wasn't that big of a controversy in the grand scheme of things, okay? So between football, there is nothing that, you know, holds these two programs together. Now, in women's basketball, obviously, that's a different story. But I can't really think of a major transfer or anything like that outside of the Dave Aranda storyline that just punches you right in the mouth. Now, here's what's funny. I did not know this at the time. But a few weeks ago, I beefed with some Baylor football players. I didn't know I was beefing with Baylor football players, nor is that what I set out to do. But I sent out a tweet about their tight end, Michael Trigg, who was at Ole Miss, And he could have been a very productive piece of the Lane Kiffin offense. I had very little knowledge of what even happened to him. That's how far off Baylor was on my radar. I had not really watched Baylor. I kept up with Dave Aranda this year, but it's not really a team that I cover. I had no clue Michael Trahick was on Baylor. But Baylor's players came after me and said, and it was like, well, you know, we're good now. And they all thought I was an Ole Miss fan. You might think I am for how much I've stooped for them to get into the college football playoff. But the truth is, this was the least sexy matchup we could have gotten. I mean, there are so many middle tier teams that I would have loved to have played this bowl cycle that was in a similar spot as us. Michigan, hell yes. That would have been so freaking cool. A rematch versus USC, hell yes. Run it back. Let's see what happens now. I would have loved that. But Baylor. Baylor! So, how should you feel about this game? How should you feel about Dave Aranda? I'll start with the former, and then we'll get into the latter. Dave Aranda is the best defensive coordinator in the history of LSU football. He is number one. Now, there are other good ones, yes. John Chavis was, in fact, here longer. Bo Pelini, especially if you take out the second run, was also very good. There are so many that you could mention. But Dave Aranda was dominant all four seasons he was here, and he won a national championship while he was here. Coached so many great players, and we would die to have a Dave Aranda defense right now. Die. So, look, it's a great story. Dave Aranda starting at Wisconsin. Obviously, that's not where he started. And then his rise to national prominence happened at LSU. Mix in there a little beef with Ed Orgeron. It is what it is. Now, I don't want this to be taken from me as complacency. I don't want anyone here to think I am being complacent with the Texas Bowl. All I am asking is for us to take the game serious, right? Let's just not overlook this and think that it's not anything. We only get 13 of these every year. A good number of teams only get 12. We get 13 of these every single season. So I'm going to celebrate each and every time we stroll out there a team. Now, we might not have a damn soul out there playing. We might be filling out a roster of 50 players. So be it. So be it. The ones that are in the portal, we're probably going to have a few opt-outs. We don't know what Will Campbell is going to do for the bowl game, like officially. I would like to think that he's not going to play. And I'll be honest, I understand that that kind of goes against who Will Campbell is, but the fact that he is a first-round pick actually helps LSU football out more than if he were to play in this bowl game and get hurt and not be a first-round pick anymore. Okay. Then a guy like Mason Taylor could opt out. It very well could happen. And then, of course, you have a lot of portal guys. Deshaun Womack is a rotational piece. C.J. Daniels, who, of course, is a really good player. And then you have some other pieces that have entered the portal that weren't really anything for LSU. Jordan Allen, the Ibiettas of the world. So there you go. And we'll talk a lot about the portal today as well. I'll be honest. I'm not happy with where we are in this bowl game. Because I watch a college football playoff reveal show, just like many of you. I went live, accidentally went live on Keir, or I set up the live. I was like, okay, might as well do it on Power Hour LSU. But this live stream was set to be on Power Hour SEC, And I want to share the LSU slant of the college football playoff. The first is that we were nowhere close to the playoff. We really weren't. Now, I understand if we would have beaten Florida, we would have been in the SEC championship game. But that's a lot of woulda, coulda, shouldas. And I could also argue that the lucky breaks went more in our favor compared to the unlucky breaks. Florida deserved to win that game. They were the better team that day. Alabama beat the brakes out off of us. And the way South Carolina and Ole Miss went, we weren't really that good of a football team this year, guys. We just weren't. And that's okay to admit that. We were not close. And what the playoff committee said today was, we are not going to have SEC bias for the sake of having SEC bias. So the standard to getting into the 12-team playoff, well, it does rely on what everyone else does, but it mostly relies on yourself. And one thing I took away from the playoff results, and we'll get into the actual teams, but I want to focus on LSU for right now, is you have some wiggle room. It is true in the 12-team playoff. You have wiggle room, but it's not as much as you think. It's just not. Okay, you've got to take care of business. You do. I also think one underrated storyline is how chaotic the SEC was. This was by far the most chaotic SEC since 2007. You had so many bottom-tier teams be very good teams or upset-minded teams. Think of all the SEC teams that were nowhere close to the playoff that beat teams with the actual playoff resumes. We were one of those teams. We beat Ole Miss in South Carolina. Arkansas beat Tennessee. Vanderbilt beat Alabama. Kentucky beat Ole Miss. That kind of upset really did not happen in the previous seasons. So, look, it doesn't matter how you slice it. We were not close to the playoff with four losses. Now, did we have some close game luck go against us? Yeah, USC definitely one of those. But we weren't close. And I do think we had one of the more favorable schedules. I don't think it ended up being the easiest. I had us third in the SEC schedule favorability rankings that I do every year. I use it for gambling purposes. My over-unders did pretty well this year. And going into the season, I felt we had the third easiest schedule. I think, you know, looking back on it, it was probably the fifth or sixth easiest schedule. Okay? So, look, that's that. Now, before I get into a few transfer portal targets and a few departures, Sunspots says, who cares about the vestigial? Did I say that correctly? Relic Bowl. I know I do. But I don't think most of you do. And that's okay. That's okay. Billy, good to see you. Franco Nation, Tony the Tiger. Type Y for yes, type N for no if the stream quality went up. Sometimes it's just the internet, okay? Sometimes it is YouTube. Sometimes they do start a little blurry, but it could have been me. I don't know. I'll tell you this. I would like to talk more about LSU Baylor than what I saw the Saints do today, and they won. Now, let's talk about portal targets. It is hard to keep up with all the transfer portal targets. It is so hard to do it. So I try not to. Whoever LSU lands, we will discuss. As many of you know, there are so many moving parts. So many. So what should we do? Where are the positions of need in the transfer portal? Well, Brian Kelly said he wants to have around 12 transfers. So that number can be all the way down to maybe 9 to 10. And depending on roster attrition, all the way up to 15. That's a pretty big portal class. Now, it's not anything too crazy. We've brought in some pretty big numbers over the years. But I do think with this being more of an emphasis publicly with this portal class, it is a bigger deal. Now, I got in trouble with this tweet. It's okay. I live with it. I have bold opinions all the time. I don't think this really was a tweet, but a lot of people have sensitive feelings nowadays. Arkansas tight end Luke Haas entered the transfer portal. He, to me, is the best tight end in the transfer portal right now. There have actually been quite a few good tight ends in the transfer portal. And all my DMs and messages said, we have Tre'Davious Green, we have Kamarion Pimpton. Do you not know who those guys are? And then I had a bunch of messages about J.D. LaFleur and a bunch of different tight ends in the past at LSU that we've developed and good stuff. And I actually do like J.D. LaFleur. NFL genetics. So worked, obviously, with this last tight end, Mason Taylor. I love it. But you guys are missing the forest for the trees. There is an increase at all levels of tight ends on the field at one time. Teams have run more 12 personnel, kind of like the New Orleans Saints. They have run a lot of 12 and 13 personnel. Taysom Hill is a big part of that. He's out for the season, but guess what? They still have Foster Moreau and Juwan Johnson, and Holker, the undrafted free agent out of Colorado State, is interesting. Had a big catch today. Tight end is a numbers game. One thing that's happened in the NFL that's interesting is they have rotated their tight ends more. The best offensive mind in the entire NFL has started and played six different tight ends this year, and his name is Andy Reid. So he's got the absolute best tight end, arguably, to ever lace up the cleats. And Noah Gray is graded out better than him. The guy that dates Taylor Swift. I forgot his name. You need a lot of tight ends in how the modern game works. All right? Now, we talked about this in Mason Taylor's departure video. We played 884 snaps of football this year. 884. Mason Taylor played 844 of those snaps at tight end. Now, offensive lineman, that makes sense because nobody takes offensive lineman off the field. Quarterback, that makes sense if you played that many snaps in total. Tight end, it doesn't make sense. Because as a tight end, you got to block defensive ends like offensive tackles, and you got to run deep routes like receivers, especially with how we motion our tight ends. It's a lot of stopping and starting. The fact that Mason Taylor was so damn durable is almost one in a million. So you have to look at it from this point of view. Proven depth. Has Kamarion Pimpton, through 2 years of football, proven he could do that? No. Now, can he do it? Maybe. But you don't know that. You don't. I think LSU really needs to get a tight end in the portal. Now, you might not get Luke Haas. I see him going to Oklahoma. The Bear Sharp out of Oklahoma entered the portal. He was their best receiver this year. He's kind of hit or miss with me, but he's okay. Y'all, we need another tight end. Because Tre'Davious Green this year did not play tight end. Now, he did have some tight end reps, but he mostly played as a wide receiver. So your tight end room is a tight end who came to LSU as a wide receiver who they were trying to mold into a tight end, which is Kamarion Pimpton. Then your second string tight end behind him, now that Mason Taylor's gone, is Trey Des Green, who was rotating in and out with the receivers. And now your third tight end is J.D. LaFleur. Those are your scholarship tight ends that you expect to have back. Y'all, it's not enough. You got to get a tight end out of the portal. But no, people had to educate me on who Kamarion Pimpton, who I like a lot. I've said that plenty of times on here. Straight as green, someone else I like a lot. But y'all, there are wide receivers labeled as tight ends when they got to LSU. Now, they're trying the blocking thing and work with them on every rep. It's hard. It's hard. Okay? You've got to get another tight end. I did not think that that would be controversial. Did not think that would be controversial on Twitter or X. But here we are. Type Y for yes, type N for no. If you believe we need to get a tight end. Now, let's take a look at the poll question. Dave Aranda is the best defensive coordinator in LSU history. 59% of you say yes. I agree. I think he is the GOAT.
Okay.
Now, do I like Luke Kuz a lot? I do. He does have an injury problem, though. He does get hurt a lot. So that does concern me. But I think he's going to go to Oklahoma. I do. I just think in general we need to go get another tight end. Wide receiver. There's one in the portal I like a lot. And there's honestly a ton of wide receivers you can go get. Wide receiver is the one position that you can go down a division and really, really get yourself a good one. CJ Daniels, obviously. But Arkansas's best wide receiver and the SEC's best wide receiver was a guy who transferred from Texas A&M Commerce and Andrew Armstrong. Trey Harris transferred from Louisiana Tech. You can find good wide receivers from lower divisions. You just can. That's a position that always has an abundance. Now, one I like a lot that I think would fit really well next to Aaron Anderson is Berrion Brown of Kentucky. Now, when I've watched Berrion Brown play, he can be a little wild at times, a little out of control. There can be extracurriculars after a play. But the guy has elite speed. He has been a proven producer at the SEC level for multiple seasons now, including as a true freshman. Also, he is a really, really, really good kickoff returner. So while he's not the biggest guy and he's not had alpha production, I think he'd be a very good fit for us. Berrion Brown out of Kentucky. Wore number 2 early in his Kentucky career, switched to number 7. I think the other Kentucky receiver that's in the portal is actually better, Dane Key. But either one of them, they're both really good players. Don't look at them being from Kentucky and being on a bad offense as a downside. They both can play. So, you know, as Jay Madison points out, does he have a drop problem? He does. He had a big one, I believe, in the Florida game. But also, he made up for it with a kickoff return for a touchdown. Okay? So, I like Dane Key probably a little bit better as a more well-rounded receiver. He'd probably be a better, like, one-for-one switch off with C.J. Daniels. But I'm fine with either. Now, this was going to be the biggest name, Kendrick Law. And look, Kendrick Law, here's what I like about him. Once again, really good return guy. Or a guy that has return capabilities. Another thing I like about Kendrick Law is he's a guy you can give a reverse to. You can do some gadget kind of things with him. Also, one thing I really like about Kendrick Law, and this is kind of a football nerd kind of thing, is when I've watched him, his blocking down the field is really good. So I know Brian Kelly, over the years, has really enjoyed taking the Louisiana discount guys, guys that were top 100 Louisiana recruits, and they go to another school. They really don't do anything at that other school, and they transfer back home. And some of those guys have turned out to be good players, but most of them have not. And that would be someone along the lines here. But Kendrick Law was a somewhat decent producer at Alabama. He's in the portal. Let's see what happens. I am open to him coming, though. I really am. Pause. Now, we get to quarterback. Does LSU need to go get a transfer portal quarterback? Yes, they do. I think that they do. But if Colin Hurley, AJ Swan, and Garrett Nussmeier all decide to come back, you're okay. I would, however, like to get somebody else in the room. Now, the guy that tickles the fancy of a lot of people here is Darian Mensa out of Tulane. Okay. So, take that for what it's worth. I've had that debate with Blake Ruffino on here before. So there you go. Now, we go over to the other side of the football. And before we get to that, you pick the single most important position that we need to address in the transfer portal. And I'll tell you what that position is for me right after this.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go. Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. Book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's XYANImaging.com. All righty. This was me with the Zion Imaging team this weekend. Actually, last night. We did a wedding together. As many of you know, I DJ a ton of weddings, and this was me in the 360 spin booth. Look at that. Huh? You love to see it, ladies and gentlemen. Look at that sexy beast of a man. So much fun. And this thing is massive. It's an igloo. It's crazy. The spin booth is so cool. Book us both. Zion Imaging, ZionImaging.com. Let's see. To me, it's safety. Give me your position that you think needs the absolute positively most help. I think it's safety. I cannot state this enough, how much football we have watched together. How many times have we said that we need to make the touchdown saving tackle? It is the single most important thing you can do as a defender, is make the tackle that prevents a 50-yard touchdown. It is so important. Excuse me. Let's say most college football teams, on average, convert in the red zone at a 6 out of every 10 clip. That's about where they are. 3 out of every 5. Okay. Some are better than that. Some are worse than that. So every time you make a touchdown saving tackle, you're theoretically saving what? That touchdown that you save becomes a 5-point play instead of a 7-point play. Just doing some back of the napkin math here. And no napkins. Okay. So that's 2 points. 2 points you save every single time you make a touchdown saver. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less, depending on where you make the tackle. Also depending on the red zone offense you're facing. That's how important those tackles are. But what is the one thing LSU gave up a lot of? A metric F-ton of 30, 40, 50, 60-yard touchdown runs. And the guy who made some of the more incredible touchdown-saving tackles, Deshaun Spears versus South Carolina, he was phased out of the lineup. Now, a lot of that was justified, but he was able to do that one thing really well. Okay? So, we need touchdown savers. It's hard to really think of safety that way, but when you think of the safety position, the single most important thing you need to do is keep the defense safe. You are the safety valve. We really struggled with that. And ironically, I hate to say it like this, but it's high school stuff. Go to a high school game, you see a lot of 40, 50, 60-yard touchdown runs. Why? Because the safeties, well, they're selling insurance in 10 years. You know, they're not big-time athletes. And offensively, the other team's best player is normally carrying that football. It is the single most important thing your defense could do is that. And Sage Ryan and Jordan Gilbert, whew, I don't mind you getting beat. I don't. I do not mind it. You've got to make the touchdown saving tackle. You just do. And if you don't make it, slow them the hell down. But what did we do this year? Sage Ryan pushed Ball, the Florida running back, into the end zone. Pushed him, helped him. Find someone that could do that. But there's also a lot of other snaps that are there for the taking. I don't understand the Deshaun Womack situation. He goes into the portal. I do think there's more at play here since he was a healthy scratch the final couple of games, including a non-travel to Florida, which is weird. But he would have played a lot next year. Defensive ends wide open. What about linebacker? You got Charles Ross coming in. You return the Weeks brothers. You return Devon Keys. But Xavier Debo Atkins is gone. He enters a portal. I like Debo. I've not talked to him in forever. But obviously he was on this channel. And I would love to have him back, but there's a lot of tweets and whatnot. What was it, a Snapchat or something like that? Huh. Weird situation all around. Let's go to Pegasus. Is anyone here worried about Blake Baker? No. No. If Tulane were to open up, I'd be worried. But John Summerall lashed back at the media about the North Carolina opening. Let's go to Bullfrog. He says the defense next year is going to be elite. Jacoby and Guillory, McKinley, Savion Jones, and Relaford. So Savion Jones, I believe, does have an extra year of eligibility. Harold Perkins, Whit Weeks, Devon Keys, and Ross at linebacker. Now, we don't have the official word of Harold Perkins just yet. But Brian Kelly has publicly stated he wants him back. Now, do they need another lockdown corner? I honestly think every single defensive back position needs to be addressed in the portal. Every single one of them. Even with the DBs they have coming in, they need to bring in as many as they possibly can. Let's go to Cliff. Catholic High grad. Defending Catholic High grad, Shelton Sampson. Why would he leave? He was in line to break out next year, or is he playing LSU for more NIL money? Yeah, I don't think LSU I don't think Shelton Sampson holding out for NIL money makes any sense. All right, what's he holding out for? Hey, LSU, I need more money, even though I have zero catches. So we would need to give him a raise for not having a single catch in a Division I Power 4 game, despite a pretty good amount of Power 4 playing opportunities. Like it's crazy to not have a catch. Y'all, Landon Ibieta has a catch. There's a lot of LSU players that have caught the football. Alex Adams had a catch. There's a lot of players that played less and have had lower recruiter rankings that have caught the football at least once. It was time for Shelton Sampson to prove himself elsewhere. Maybe a fresh start is needed. Sometimes that's all you need. And that will always be one of my biggest recruiting whiffs. I really thought he was something. I really, really, really did. But on this day, I will proudly state that I was just wrong on him. proudly state. Now, I didn't have him as like a Jamar Chase level producer, but I had him to be pretty good. I thought it was going to be Terrace Marshall. Yes, Ashton Stamps should come back. Once again, I don't know. Like, obviously, with the corner with that many snaps, he would get some portal interest, but how many big programs would give him interest compared to a certain situation at LSU? Raylan says Portland State. Okay. Nothing wrong with Portland State. Let's go to Alan, who's in the snow. College football is ruined. It's all about the money with no rules. Some players transfer three or four times. Well, including everyone's favorite player, TJ Finley. He's about to be at his fourth school in 4 years. Spent one season with LSU, two seasons at Auburn. Transferred to Texas State, had a really good season. And then this last year at Western Kentucky got benched, and now he's got one more year of eligibility. So he's going to get one more NIL check. Good for him. Good for him. I'm rooting for him. I am. He won us some games as a true freshman. I give him a lot of credit for that. But he's not a Power Four quarterback. So, fourth different school in 4 years. Fifth school overall. Insane. Absolutely insane to me. Now, one last thing on the Shelton Sampson thing. I have so much more sympathy and interest in someone like him coming back if he played defensive back. I would have a lot more interest. But this is wide receiver at LSU. This is the highest standard position we have on the roster. We have guys who leave for playing time reasons only to become Biletnikoff finalists at their new schools. It's just the standard. It's that freaking hard to play wide receiver at LSU. So through two seasons, if you played a full two seasons and you don't have a catch, and you played some, do you really want to wait for a third season? I don't know. It's a high standard. Let's see here. So I get tagged in a tweet here about Cole Kublik saying, I didn't hear the segment, but he said LSU's biggest problem this year with its offense was its play caller. I agree. I really do agree. It's not necessarily that Joe Sloan was just the absolute worst. I don't think he was the absolute worst. I don't think it was like Jake Pete's level. And I also think that that had a lot to do with Orgeron as well. But was Joe Sloan really the right decision for us? He wasn't. That was also a miss by me. I said I would run it with Joe Sloan. And there was a lot of process reasons as to why I would have done that. Number one, he sat next to Mike Dimbrock. So, you know, he is a quarterback's coach. Obviously, recruiting with Bryce Underwood, that all played a role into all of us wanting Sloan back to actually call the plays. But I would put a good 65-ish percent on our offensive struggles on Joe Sloan. Now, we could talk about offensive line technique and run blocking and Nuss's limitations and turnovers. There are so many different things you can point to. But I go back to this. If you watch as much football as I watch, and I'm lucky enough I get to watch a lot because I get paid to do it, you will see other offenses scheme things up a lot. All right? So I think a lot of you were probably going to say, hey, what is the number one reason that the LSU offense struggled? I think a lot of you are going to say, or I think I was going to say DJ Chester, because I brought up DJ Chester's name quite a bit and how bad he was. He just was bad. I mean, there's really no other way to describe it. It's not really his fault, though, because if DJ Chester played any other position, any reasonable coach would have already tried something new. Okay. So, with that out of the way, I want to share something that I found to be interesting. And we'll get into the playoff discussion now. I love Tennessee. I very publicly stated they are my number two favorite team in the SEC. Their films, my Tennessee film studies do numbers. And I give them a lot of credit. Ironically, my most viewed film studies came against Vanderbilt and Chattanooga. I mean, that's how much they freaking love this team, all right? Now, of course, LSU fans support me more than anyone else. It's my team. But Tennessee, I'm always going to have a lot of respect for them. And they made the playoff this year, and their offense was very clunky. But the funny thing about Tennessee making the playoff is Nico was not as good as Garrett Nussmeier this year. He just wasn't. I watched pretty much every snap of both of them. And Garrett Nussmeier clears Nico. But I cannot stress this enough. And I am not a coach, nor am I a player, nor am I in the meeting rooms, and I don't know everything that is asked of every single player. But Garrett Nussmeier, based on my understanding of what Joe Sloan tried to accomplish on offense, had to do so much more than so many other quarterbacks have to do on a play-to-play basis. Now, this is where the Joe Sloan aspect of things coming into it comes into this conversation. How much of that is on Sloan? How much of that is on the head coach? Well, for Tennessee, the play caller and the coach are the same, right? So it's a little bit different when it comes to this conversation. But the lowest graded PFF offensive tackle duo in the SEC was Tennessee. By far. Lance Hurd at left tackle, John Campbell at right tackle, was by far the lowest graded offensive tackle duo. Now, Mississippi State was technically lower. But Tennessee made the playoff with that. And they made the playoff with a quarterback who did not play as well as Garrett Nussmeier. Now, what did Tennessee have in their favor? Well, they had an easier schedule. Their schedule turned out to be easier than ours. And they also had Dylan Sampson, who's really freaking good. But the biggest criticism of Garrett Nussmeier is what? Turnovers. Well, Dylan Sampson had a massive turnover issue this year. Massive. I know it's different for a running back and a quarterback. Garrett had more. But Dylan Sampson had four first-half fumbles in SEC games this year that he lost. And they were big. But Tennessee was able to overcome a bad fumbling issue from their best player, two lowly graded offensive tackles, a very erratic quarterback. Why were they able to do it? Things get schemed up so freaking open for them because Josh Heupel's offense works like that. And the second thing is their defense is really good. Our defense was not really good. Our defense was okay. Tennessee's defense is really good, borderline elite. Okay? And there's LA Mom. Tennessee had an elite defense. That is true. That is true. Where I'd push back, though, on Tennessee's elite defense is I do think they had the easiest run-up of offenses that they had to face this year in the SEC. They didn't have to play Ole Miss. They didn't have to play Sellers in South Carolina. They didn't have to play us. So, you know, they were able to avoid quite a few really good offenses. They avoided Texas as well. It's just the bottom line. So I understand Cole Kubelik, who watches more film than I do, probably. We really lacked elite play calling this year. And I understand Joe Sloan is only in his first year. But y'all, this is the SEC, and it's not Joe Sloan's fault that this is probably the best play calling conference we've ever seen in the SEC. It really is that. I mean, it's just that simple. There are so many really freaking good ones. And look, you know, one just got a big job, Appalachian State, Dow Loggins. That's a pretty big non-Power 5 job. Yeah, but I don't know if I would say Carson Beck cooked him. He had a rough first quarter and had a few things go his way, but he was really good in that game. They couldn't stop a tight end to save their life, which goes back to my earlier point. Georgia's got a deep tight end room. Okay. Now, here's what we're going to do. In the next 10 to 15 minutes, I'm going to answer as many questions as I possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. I do want to shout out our top super chatter of the evening was Miss Janice. Shout out to you, Janice. Now, programming note. There will be no live stream on Tuesday unless you want me to do something that has never been done before on PHL. Because on Tuesday night, I'm going to see the GOAT live in concert. One of the best solo acts of the modern decade. Or the modern era. Can you tell me who that is? All right. Can you tell me? Who that is? Here's a hint. He was the only non-LSU related thumbnail image on a film study I did last year. Jay Madison says, I didn't care for Texas play calling yesterday. So I didn't get to watch a full game. I was DJing a wedding. I did rewatch all their offensive snaps, but I wasn't able to just like sit and watch it. But Quinn Ewers played amazing. So, Chino, good to see you. Tennessee at Ohio State, +7.5. But you can actually just go look at my page and you'll find his face His face is the thumbnail image. One of the best pop stars of the modern era. Willie Nelson. But I will be there Tuesday night. If you guys want me to go live, I'll go live from the show. I don't give a damn. So I get a super chat here from a Venmo from LA Mom. She says, my honest opinion of Tommy Rees. I wouldn't go in that direction. Kevin Hart or Doug Stanhope? Pop musical star. I did see Kevin Hart in this same venue, though, a few years ago. I'll give you a hint. One of his biggest songs is about a reflection. Okay. This item gives off a reflection. There you go. Wait, hold on. I think I see it. Mr. James got it. JT. Let's go. Yeah, we're going to go see JT on Tuesday. Bucket list item. But LA Mom, I would not go the Tommy Rees direction. In many ways, that would be kind of a nepotism hire. And I'm not a big fan of nepotism hires. But I'm in an industry rife of nepotism. So, whatever. So, Janice and LA Mom. The female's holding it down tonight with the super chats. Appreciate you. Now, I do want to address something. There was a viral tweet that said something. It was like three women talking about football. It looked like it was Holly Rowe, Laura Rutledge, who I know not well, but we used to do a show way back when. And then somebody else. Y'all, women should be allowed to talk about football just because they didn't play football. It's impossible for them to play. You know, I do film study analysis, and I get a lot of praise for it. I played at a high school level. I was a mediocre player. I've never been a coach or anything like that. I do NFL film studies and whatever. You don't need to have played the game to know the game. Now, do I think my limited playing helped? Yeah, it definitely gave me a leg up. But it is what it is. Serious question. Is Georgia out because their quarterback is out? No, because Georgia had a very good run-up. So Georgia, I think, got the easiest draw. I really do think so. And what we'll do before we get to Boris' super chat is we will talk about Georgia's, we'll talk about the playoff. And I'll give you a few predictions. I think the most heavily bet team to win it all will be Georgia. Okay. So we'll use this Fox Sports image. It was just the first one that pulled up. I have one pulled up, but I accidentally X'd out of it because I have fat fingers. And here you go. So, Georgia will play the winner of Notre Dame in Indiana. And then from that bracket, they will play the winner of Boise State, SMU, Penn State. Desmond, thank you for your super chat. Who would I like for new tight end coach or offensive coordinator? I'll give you that answer in a minute. I think there's actually quite a few guys that I would bring in. You know, one offense I like to watch a lot is Iowa State's offense. I think they do a lot of things that I like. So someone that understands, I don't know anything about their offense coordinator or anything like that. I've not really done any research for an offensive coordinator just yet because Joe Sloan is still the guy for right now. Okay. But, you know, I don't think Georgia's out. I don't. Who is the best win between Notre Dame and Indiana? Who is the best team that they have beaten? And then tell me in the bottom right corner here, who is the best team that Boise State, SMU, or Penn State has beaten? So I won't go too deep into any of this because we did earlier today. But Georgia has far better wins than any of these teams. I would guess Notre Dame's best victory is, what would it be? Would it be Army? Okay, they beat Louisville. They beat Texas A&M at Texas A&M, very first game of the season. A&M was not playing their right quarterback by that time. So I don't know. I don't know who Notre Dame's best victory would be. I said Army. I meant to say Navy. And then Indiana, I guess on the road versus Michigan would be their best win. Who is the best team that Texas has beaten? That's a good question. They did beat A&M in A&M. But outside of that, it would be Vanderbilt. So, honestly, there's just not many good wins in the playoff field. And that's why when you have a 12-team playoff field, it's going to come down almost every season to how many losses you have. It's just how it works. It's just it. I mean, Clemson lost their biggest November game, and they still got into the field. It's just how this thing works. Now, to Desmond Super, he did get one in a little bit earlier. Who would I like as tight end coach or new offensive coordinator? TE coach is going to come down to who the OC is. I think if LSU moves on from Joe Sloan, which I think they should, having a tight end opening helps out a lot. Because I think they're going to want to keep Brad Davis and Cortez Hankton. Because they not only, I think, are good coaches, but they have huge salaries. Boris says, the Dogs have a unique opportunity to beat Texas 3 times in a season. That is true. We'll pull up the bracket again. Here's the thing I don't like about this bracket. And the committee could have worked around this. So throughout the whole bracket, they avoided first round rematches. And they also avoided conference versus conference in the first round. The big problem for me is Oregon and Tennessee. I don't understand how Tennessee can be ranked 9th, but they get by far the hardest draw of any team in this playoff. Now, how could you be ranked 9th and have a way harder draw than the team ranked 12th? Because if Clemson could get by Texas, they get Arizona State. If Tennessee gets by Ohio State, they get Oregon. Not fair for the 9 versus a 12 here. Same thing is true here with SMU and Penn State. Why does SMU get the big benefit of playing Penn State, who's not as good as Ohio State, but now SMU, if they win this game versus a very flawed Penn State team, and one of my hottest takes is I'm not sure Penn State should even be in the field. The winner of this game gets Boise State. So Tennessee got a raw deal. I think Oregon also got a raw deal. I have no idea why they don't. If Clemson wins, Oregon automatically plays Clemson in a 1-12, like they do in the NFL. But no, they have to have these rigid brackets, which don't make any sense in the modern playoff. Now, you have to do these things in March Madness, but in this playoff format, you don't have to have rigid seeds. It doesn't make any sense. It serves no purpose at all, other than ticketing. Yeah, we talked about him a little bit earlier, Dante. I'm interested, but I don't know if he is. Yes, shout out FGCU. I didn't watch a game today, I'll be honest. I didn't watch a Grambling game either. I did, however, watch that Stanford game. Mikayla Williams, are you kidding me? But it was a big deal that LSU played Grambling, and shout out beating Dunk City today. LSU. Yeah, Mina Kimes is awesome. Absolutely, positively awesome. I've spoken with Mina before via email. Francisco says, college football just needs to give the automatic bids to Power Four conference champions and seed teams 1 through 12 regardless whether they're conference championship or not. I have no problem with Boise State being the 3 seed. No problem. They went undefeated with one loss. That doesn't make any sense. But their one loss was a close loss to the number one overall team. Y'all, I understand that there's a lot of people pissed off that Boise State gets a bye. I get it. And you can make a very strong argument that they should not get a bye. Because most people would power rate them as the 12th team in the field. But every single NIL and portal rule works against Boise State and group of five teams. Every single one of them. So they're fighting an uphill battle to begin with. And to keep the tradition of the group of five being involved with the Power Five, I have no problem with giving them less than 10% equity of the college football playoff. No problem with it at all. It doesn't need to be the SEC Big Ten Invitational. Y'all, the Big Ten was garbage this year. Garbage. If you want to have the super conferences, go right on ahead and do it. But how good were the super conferences this year? Hell, we don't even have a unified scheduling format yet. It would be one thing if the SEC schedule was a well-oiled machine. But how can we as the SEC sit high and mighty, high and toity above everyone else when in a 16-team conference, saw an 8-game conference schedule in our first year and decided, you know what we should do? We should run it back, the exact same schedule that everyone played last year, run it back the next year. Who thinks that? I'm so sick and tired of people thinking the SEC is above everyone. And the funny thing is, it's not just SEC people that say this. It's a lot of the national media that does this. We don't have to give the SEC a reach around to love this conference. You don't need to. A big part of my brand is the SEC. And I understand that I lose potential opportunities saying and having such strong opinions about SEC this, SEC that. But the point still remains the same. I have been very sympathetic in particular to one team, and that's Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss should be in the field over SMU, Alabama, and Miami. And I've stated my reasons plenty of times, and I think it's honestly clear as day that they deserve to be in. But that's, to me, going up against other teams that have very flawed resumes. You're in comfortably if you just beat Kentucky. You're in comfortably. But I can't, you know, just sympathize with the fact that I think you would skull drag SMU. I think you would do disturbing things to Boise State. I think it would shut Gentile down. I think all those things. I think Ole Miss would win the national championship if they got in. They were the best team I saw at their peak. But you lost to Kentucky. And you lost to LSU. And you lost to Florida. And did you get unlucky that you played the Florida team of the past couple of weeks? You did. You got very unlucky. And you had a lot of bad injury luck. But beat Kentucky, you're not in this problem. It's okay, and I get sick of it. I get sick of it. I see national media members who don't get direct checks from the SEC. J.D. Pickle talking about SEC this, SEC that. Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl, who I respect a lot. Knows ball, knows a lot about ball. Had this tweet earlier today that he spoke to scouts throughout the NFL saying, hey, if we were to field the 12 best teams, he even mentioned LSU getting in. Seriously. What are we doing here? What are we doing here? What was the point of playing the season? I have really biased LSU fans that watch this channel. Hell, I'm a very biased LSU fan. But I give objective analysis. Not even the most biased LSU fan would even consider LSU in this field. Okay. I'm sick and I'm so sick and tired of it. Now, with that said, I would have put Ole Miss in the field. I would have put Ole Miss in the field. I think one thing that gets lost in the discussion of college football is how the games are actually played. You know, I don't mind wins and losses counting for a lot. And I have been the biggest truth teller of avoiding losing. I've been telling you this. I mean, going back to my KLSU days, I learned this pretty quickly, that avoiding losing is the single most important thing. It's not who you beat. Nobody cares. Avoiding losing is the most important thing. But as I've gotten older, I do care about how you play in each and every game. Every quarter, every half. And the bottom line is Ole Miss played three very close games this year. And they lost all three of them. Every other game that they played this year, they won by double digits. So literally, they had the worst luck in close possession games. They were 10-3 in games decided by double digits or more. And they were 0-3 in games decided by one possession or less. One was a three-point loss to Kentucky that they did not lead until the final 2 minutes. The other was a three-point loss to LSU, which we won literally. We only led that entire game by one play. And then the other was a seven-point loss on the road versus Florida with a Florida team. I think I see Blake in here. What's up, Blake? A Florida team that could have beaten Georgia if Lagway would have stayed healthy and looked like a completely different team with DJ Lagway a quarterback. Texas didn't have to face that. Those were Ole Miss's only three losses. Every other SEC team with three or more losses, every single one of them got blown out. In fact, every single SEC team had a double-digit point loss this season, except for Ole Miss. They were the only ones. So what does that mean? That means every single time that Ole Miss played the game of football in all 12 of the data points that we had for them, they never had a bad game. Not a single one. They were never run off the field by Oklahoma. It's just that simple. It's just that simple. Now, once again, I don't have a lot of sympathy for them. But I understand this is a very flimsy point, and it's not part of my main argument. I just want to make this just a quick point here, a quick one. One of my hottest takes is I'm not sure if Penn State should be in the field, but they're uncomfortably number six ranked team. It could just be I'm tired of seeing them. Whatever. Ole Miss blew the brakes off of Penn State in their bowl game last year. I mean, ran them off the field. And that team was not nearly as good as this team. This team is way better. Ole Miss blew the freaking brakes off of them. Wasn't even close. The only difference, the only place where they were better in that game was running back, where they had Judkins. Everywhere else, they're better. So if you want to add that data point to it, it's kind of flimsy. Whatever. They're the best team I saw this season. They just did not have the close game luck. They just didn't have it. Juan Soto to the Yankees. $765 million on a 15-year deal. Julie, text me tomorrow. I'll tell you a little bit more about Tommy Rees. But why I don't want it. You know, I said nepotism earlier. I don't think that's the right word. I don't think Tommy Rees is terrible either. Oh, wait, he went to the Mets? Oh, it's the Mets. I thought it said New York on my thing. He went to the Mets? The Mets did that? What? All right, it's enough baseball for now. Unless we're talking about Monster Milam. No baseball chatter at all, other than Jay Johnson winning his second natty in 3 years. And as much pro Tennessee stuff I've given out today, Tony V, you can suck it. You can suck it, Tony V. I'm kidding. Whether or not you want to admit it, Tony V is really good for college baseball. He's really good for the SEC. He's been the best coach. I think Jay Johnson's been the second best over the last couple seasons. But Tony V is making us better. It's making the SEC better. It's good when the best coaches in the smaller sports are controversial. It's good. The Mets, dude. The freaking Mets. Also say this. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback of this era. But I just don't know how anybody can watch the NFL every freaking week. And with the NFL channel I do, I watch more NFL than I ever have. And think that Patrick Mahomes is so far ahead of everybody else. I don't think I'll ever come to terms with that. He can win as many Super Bowls as he wants to. Y'all, Josh Allen, like, blows my freaking brains open every time I watch. He does. How's the Taylor Swift show going? Good. Josh Allen does shit I did not think a QB could do. I know they lost today, but did what? He's throwing to cardboard men out there with Al-Qaeda, whoever, as his coach. What? Am I the only one that's seen this with Josh Allen? I can't do the Mahomes. I hate it. I hate the Mahomes favoritism. Is he the best? I guess. Yeah, sure. But I will never get to that point knowing that Patrick Mahomes is Andy Reid. And we know how big play calling is in the NFL. I just can't do it. I can't do it. But Josh Allen existing and Lamar Jackson existing. Now, did both of them turn into a corn cob versus Mahomes last year? They did. In particular, Lamar did. But, you know, Burrow's playing the best football of his life. Doesn't have that defense and doesn't have that coach. I'm sorry. I can't watch what Josh Allen did today and think that Patrick Mahomes is way better than that guy. Well, Carter, what about the postseason? Okay, don't give up a field goal with 13 seconds left. Shit is insane what Josh Allen does. It is absolutely insane. And that's true, Pegasus. I'm not denying that. But this could be true, and there still be a colossal gap between Sean McDermott being your coach and Andy Reid being your coach. That is a chasm. That is a chasm. Okay? Chasm. Let's go to DA. We'll take a few more. Once again, if you super, we'll keep going. I watch a lot of you and others film study. There were wide receivers who ran the route and got wide open while Nuss was running for his life, throwing picks or check downs. So it's a really bad play calling. Okay. So DA, you are right. You watch a lot of my film studies. So give me a play where there was a receiver just running wide the frick open, and give me a play where that receiver was not CJ Daniels. Because there were times where C.J. Daniels was open. But some of it isn't some of it is progression-based stuff. I also think this is, and I have a bunch of general football takes, and a lot of this stuff is anecdotal. But if I had to choose between having a really, and I made this point earlier with Tennessee, choose between having a really, really, really bad offensive tackle or a really, really, really bad center, I am taking the bad offensive tackle. If you have a center who is struggling a lot, it directly impacts a quarterback more than an offensive tackle would. Now, the difference is, your center making a mistake, you're going to notice it, where an offensive tackle, it could be on your blind side a little bit easier. But I do think poor center play is so hard to overcome. And you're all right. Garrett Nussmeier had issues with that. But part of that is on the play calling. Part of it is on the play calling. And if I were to rank, what are the most important things that a play caller needs to do or an offense needs to do from a coaching staff perspective? Your scheme is so important. How you draw things up is so important. But before all of that, the single most important thing is playing the correct players. Your scheme is very important. More important in this sport than any other sport. But what makes football so much harder when it comes to your scheme is there's actually two different hurdles that you have to clear as a play caller. I spoke about this once with a Division II play caller, okay? The first thing you have to do is rep plays that you think your team would be good at running. And then run things out of those plays. All right, so finding which plays work with what you have is so vitally important. And getting game reps along with practice reps and getting the fluidity down of those things is so very important. Now, the second part of offensive success that I think is even harder at the Division I Power 4 level compared to all the other levels is determining if you have the right players on the field. Because you're constantly in a battle between, number one, am I playing the correct players? And number two, if I pull this guy, am I risking all the experience that he had in the sake of just trying something new? And it's hard. You know, in basketball, it's not only easier to figure out your lineup rotations, your plays, and all those things. You have all season to figure it out. You just kind of have to tread water, win some games. And if you have your right lineup rotations by conference tournament time, you're set. Even if you're a 6, 7, 8 seed, you're set. College football, you're not allowed that runway, which is why, as a college football Power 4 program, I'm not in favor of playing tough season openers. And I'm not just saying that because LSU's lost the last gazillion of these. All right? So answer this question. Would LSU have beaten USC if Caden Durham was in at running back? Do you think Caden Durham would have been the difference? The answer to that is, I don't know. The way I understand it was when Caden Durham got to LSU in the fall, there was a little bit of a learning curve, as there would be with any other running back. So he might not have been the player that he was versus South Carolina. And by the way, my Mahomes rant wasn't really anti-Mahomes. It's just everybody else is really good. Did you know this is Taylor Swift's last show of the Eras Tour? Did you know? Arguably the biggest musical tour of all. It's been a great show. Oh, I can't tell you how bad that Saints-Giants game was. Holy hell. That was arguably some of the most brutal football I've ever watched. Let's go to Wade. Was Sloan limited in his play calling because of bad center play? Also, you think Brian Kelly is running it back with him next year? I don't think Brian Kelly is going to do that. Okay. So this would be the question that I would ask you, Wade. Was Joe Sloan as bad as Matt House? Type Y for yes, type in for no. If you think Joe Sloan was as bad as Matt House. The answer to that is probably no. It's probably no. Brian Kelly likes loyalty. But, yeah, I don't think he will. I don't think he will. Do I think Sloan was limited in his play calling because of bad center play? Yes, I've looked this up. I mean, our center play was so much worse than every other team in the SEC. That's out of maybe a few. But it goes back to the point, right? It is so important to play the right players, okay? And that's why, you know, with center, it's a little bit different. You know, one thing we kind of assume with center play is it's just about how you're blocking. No. If it was just about how DJ Chester was blocking, we would have already moved Dellinger to center and put Adams at guard or flip-flopped Chester and Dellinger. But, you know, it's more than just about blocking. You got to have a good snap. DJ Chester was insanely accurate with the snap. Insanely accurate. Like, it was very impressive. It's just everything else. I am still shocked that Brian Kelly did not try anything new. I was very shocked with that. I was also kind of surprised Brian Kelly was ever asked about it. You know, everybody's got access to the PFF grades. At least I don't think he wasn't asked about it.
I'm terrible.
I wish we would have gotten the Pop-Tart Bowl. Well, we got a Notre Dame fan in here. Let's go. I'm just glad Dabo's in this playoff. Dave Aranda, man. Okay, tell me this. Outside of Patrick Mahomes, who is a better quarterback that you've seen than Josh Allen? Is it Lamar Jackson? Obviously, you know, my bias would say Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels. We'll see. I'll take a few more, though. Once again, if you want to keep it going, feel free to super chat. Oh, man. If we rated quarterbacks on how much a running back's hands cut their rear end, then Jalen Hurts is LeBron James and Michael Jordan put together. Like, look, if a quarterback was judged by how many times he had his booty cheeks touched by hands, and Kim Kardashian's the best quarterback of all time. Yeah. You know, I'm such a Kelce homer. I've always liked the Kelces. I really have. I was kind of hoping that Tush Push would just fail this year, so it could be a Jason Kelce thing instead of a Jalen Hurts thing. But it's very much a Jalen Hurts thing. And the fact that he can squat 600 pounds, like the media tells you every single time. Like I said on the stream this morning, Jalen Hurts is going to give you a solid 18 to 24 fantasy points every week. Nothing more, nothing less. So he's not going to give you spike weeks. He's going to give you a good bit. But I'll tell you this. The Eagles have won 9 straight games. 9 consecutive games. A.J. Brown is still pissed. A.J. Brown, his post-game media was something. I guarantee you, as an entire species, wide receivers are the toughest position to please in any sport. Like, it is insane. Like, their usage is so important. This is a good question from David. What would our record be if we still had Dimbrock as our offensive coordinator? Because obviously Dimbrock's in the playoffs now, and he's done a really good job with Notre Dame this year. I don't know. Like, it's a very, very, very good question, because we never saw Dimbrock call an entire game with Nuss as his quarterback. And I think just by watching – we can clearly see that what we witnessed last year with LSU, a lot of it was Jaden Malik and BTJ just being alphas. You know? But Sloan was really good. I thought offensively he was really good. I thought his first year at LSU was kind of eh. Okay, so Sam says Jamari Butler out of Nebraska, wearing his final three. 65 tackles, 7.5 sacks. Let's go. All right, see what Justin Herbert does here. Chargers play for the field goal. I would have done the same thing there. I'm not a big fan of doing that, but I would have in that spot. All right, y'all. That'll just about do it for me. Big thanks to our super chatters, AP, Boris, Julie, LA Mom, Desmond, Janice, and of course, Wade here.
Love it.
Wide right. No, that's Dicker. He's too good. No, don't always take the points. You don't always take the points, especially with Mahomes on the other sideline. Once again, I'm not a Mahomes hater. All right, we will be live. We'll go live from the Justin Timberlake concert on Tuesday night. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that. But if we get enough interest, I'll go live during mirrors. Huh?
It is. Power. Power. LSU. Boom.
Señorita, let's go.